Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi, this is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio. Each week, we give you the best news, views, and interviews from the health technology world. From CEOs and founders to entrepreneurs and clinicians, the companies and people that are shaping the future face of healthcare. All on the world's number one talk health radio. Hello and welcome to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, your host, Steve Roost. Each week, we bring you the best news, views and interviews with the leaders, clinicians, founders and CEOs that are leading the healthcare revolution in the UK and beyond. As regular listeners know, I am a founder and CEO of a health tech venture myself called PocDoc. PocDoc support the show. Thank you very much. And PocDoc are scaling out across the UK with our healthy heart check. So within 10 minutes, you're able to deliver the equivalent of an NHS health check, either in a pharmacy, or if you're lucky enough to live in one of the areas where it's available on the NHS, or alternatively, you can go to our website, pocdoc.co, and find more information there. That's pocdoc.co if you are interested in your 10-minute healthy heart check. So, as ever, thank you to everyone that's listening live on UK Health Radio, on the amazing UK Health Radio. We are one of many shows on the platform, and we're very proud that this is our live platform. I would recommend that you listen to all of the other shows that are available. They're all fantastic. Thank you if you are listening on demand on any of the podcast platforms. So Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Google, we're on all of them. Thank you very much. And finally, thank you if you are watching on YouTube or catching up with our short form content on my Instagram channel, which is at Steve Roost. That's at Steve Roost on the Instagram, and then it's at Health Tech Hour on YouTube. Also, I say this every week, but all of the UK Health Radio shows are available on the on podcast channels. So not just our show, but all of them. So you can access this content either through the UK Health Radio channel or directly through the Health Tech Hour channel. I hope that's somewhat clear for everybody. Now, on to the next thing. UK Health Radio have very kindly awarded PocDoc the Health Check 2024 award as part of their UK Health Radio 2024 Health Awards. So I know PocDoc will be doing some promotion around that. Thank you very much for everyone that voted for us in that award, in those awards. Looking back on the last show that we did, which was with Dr. Danny Herantz from Hurdle, one of the co-founders of Hurdle, that show was an absolute mind blower, a deep dive into epigenetics and this sort of software programming layer that sits on top of all of our genetics. We've already had over 150,000 streams, 150,000 streams and counting for that show. So if you missed it, check it out. Again, YouTube, all of the podcast channels, go check it out. It was unbelievably incredible and interesting. And Danny has got a fantastic insight of what it means to have been a scientist transitioning across into a founder of a really successful business. So if you're, you know, technical or scientific or in an engineering role and you're thinking about founding a business, it's probably a good one for you to go and listen to. Now, on to this week. We've got something completely different this week. And I'm really excited about it because we've not had anybody from this sector on the show before. And this sector, being dentistry, was a major topic in the run-up to the UK general election, which we just had. It was featured regularly in the news, regularly in the media, and actually, Labour created a number of attack adverts showing images of huge queues outside dentists' offices and sort of trying to communicate this point that the UK dentistry system was in some way broken and that was the result, that was the fault of the previous government. So again, I don't know what the truth is of those things. I'm just sort of setting the scene, but that's one of the reasons why I'm so interested to have our guest on today. So on today's show, we have Dr. Tony Ahmed, who is a veteran dentist and chair of the Shropshire and Staffordshire Local Dental Network and a board member of the Staffordshire and Stoke-on-Trent Integrated Care Board. Now, an integrated care board is what a lot of you might call an NHS trust, but is the new thing, what we call a, it's not exactly the same, but conceptually for you listeners, it's probably the same thing. So Tony is basically a contender for one of the most qualified and most senior dentists in the UK. And it's an honor to have him on the show. And so Tony, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for that introduction. I don't think I feel like an imposter now. No, I thank you so much for that really very, very nice introduction. At the end of the day, I'm just a dentist. That's what I say to people. But I what I've tried to do, certainly over the 30 years or so I've been qualified now, is to try and improve the lot of not just patients, but also of the profession. And that's sort of what we're going to be talking about hopefully today as well. But thank you so much for that. It's great to be here. And hopefully I can try and fly the flag a little bit for not just dentistry, but the wider sort of healthcare sector as well in the UK.
And I think the reason that I also wanted to get onto the show, otherwise, obviously, we like having people on the show that can give the listeners an insight into what the reality is of things that they hear about and see and also experience directly themselves. But I'm also interested in you have a particular interest or passion for that oral hygiene should be incorporated as a key part of overall body health, not treated separately, which I think is really interesting and is an area that I want to get into.
Yeah, very much. I mean, this is something, I mean, as I say, as a profession, the dental profession, we have lots of these little buzzwords flying around. One of the big one, this is the previous chief dental officer, Sarah Hurley. She started this one, putting the mouth back into the body. And this is something we've sort of taken on that I think historically the mouth has sort of been left a little bit to one side. But actually, what we're trying to do now with some of the work that we're doing is trying to bring that back into the mainstream, bring it back into mainstream healthcare. Say, actually, what's going on inside your mouth has quite a significant impact on your general health as well. And as you say, if we can, prevention is always going to be better than cure. If we can try and prevent a lot of these diseases, and when we talk about dental health, there's two main diseases, isn't there? There's dental decay and there's gum disease. Those are two main diseases that we talk about. Obviously, there's lots of other little things as well, but the main ones. But the important thing from my perspective is they're completely preventable. There's no reason why someone should have tooth decay if they're good at looking after the teeth, if they're good at cleaning and watching their diet. And the same goes for gum disease as well. Obviously, there are lots of sort of predisposing factors there as well. But if we can try and get the messages out through the profession as well as through the sort of general wider public as well, hopefully we can try and stop some of this disease from developing.
And do you oh, now we're good. We're just going to jump straight into it because I'm interested. But around gum disease, there was some research, I believe, published, I think in the last couple of years, connecting gum disease to dementia or Alzheimer's.
Oh, there's a number of things now. So certainly that one. So yeah, there's been lots of research being done recently. One of the main sort of centers of sort of what we call periodontal research, which is sort of gum disease research, is the University of Birmingham. Now, Ian Chappell is very big on that. It's Professor Ian Chappell there. And one of the things he picked up with is the fact that gum disease can be a marker for lots of other diseases in the rest of the body, but also it can be a trigger for it as well. So absolutely, Alzheimer's is one. Actually, heart disease was the other big one as well. Heart disease and stroke. So they're picking up lots of things that if you have good oral health, if you have good hygiene, good do not have gum disease, then you are much less likely to have other diseases in the rest of your body as well. And
And do
what?
they
Sorry.
and do they know why? Do they
Yeah.
know?
Absolutely, yeah. So this is the bacteria. So there's certain types of bacteria in your mouth which they if they proliferate, then they get into the bloodstream and then go to other parts of the body. So that's where the research is based. So if you can try and keep the bacteria level low down in your mouth, then it doesn't get into your bloodstream, doesn't get into other parts of the body. And what they're finding is, and this is what a lot of the research is based on, is that they're finding, so you know, bacteria in your mouth, in sort of heart valves and other parts of your body there as well.
So
And
they've actually found
there's a
oral
link.
bacteria
Yeah.
in other organs.
And that's what they're trying to do now, is to try and work out it, you know, if they can properly treat sort of oral health and gum disease, how much of an impact that's going to have on cardiovascular health and heart disease, stroke, dementia. There's a whole load of other things that sort of as a knock-on effect of that as well. And this is
That, I
current
mean,
research. There's
this
loads of
is
stuff
exactly
going
one
on
of the
now.
reasons why I like getting people like yourself on the show, because I think that there's one way to view this dentistry area, which we'll get into, which is let's address what's in the media and I think try and understand it from a systems perspective, because I think whether it's a GP appointment or a dentist appointment or whatever it happens to be, everyone's felt some frustration there probably. But there's more to it. It's never just one-sided. But actually, there's this much wider, much more important, well, I mean, more important is the wrong thing to say, much more broad discussion around, like you say, putting the mouth back into the body and the cost of presumably preventative oral hygiene is just, I mean, the ROI on that must be insane in
Huge.
terms of preventing
Absolutely.
dementia and heart
Absolutely.
attacks and strokes.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. I mean, and I think this is where obviously we've got a new government coming in. Hopefully these are sort of some of the things that myself, I mean, I'm a local dental network chair. I work with the Office of the Chief Dental Officer. Currently it's Jason Wong, who's working very closely with the Department of Health to try and look at ways of trying to bring prevention. You know, we can always talk about, you know, treating disease, but actually, if you can prevent it, it's going to be much better in the long run. And absolutely, the cost benefits are huge. If you think about how much, you know, still heart disease is the biggest killer. If you can try and reduce that down to much lower levels, the cost savings to the NHS, to the wider public, to social care is huge. And certainly, dentistry has a part to play in that. I'm not saying it's the solution, but it has a significant part to play. And for lots of reasons, I think, you know, the patients that come and see us are not necessarily the same patients that go to the doctor. We see a slightly different sort of demographic, and that
And
helps.
also, I think that's also something I want to get into, which is, I mean, I guess I can ask the question now as a segue into this debate, is that do you believe that dentistry is somewhat separate to the rest of the NHS system? And if so, was it always that way? What's the sort of evolution of that been?
Yeah, so again, historically, as I say, I've been in dentistry for 30 plus years now, so I'm a very old man now. And over the years, I've seen lots of contracts come and go, the way the NHS has evolved over the last 30 years as well. And unfortunately, one of the consequences of this, and this is going back to when the last sort of big change happened in 2006, which was the NHS dental contract changed. And essentially what happened there was that the contracts are now individually subcontracts. So each dental provider has a contract with the local team. So I know these days they're called ICSs. Back in the day, they were called PCTs, Primary Care Trusts. And again, these sort of evolved over time. And because they're separate, the money was capped. And as soon as they capped the money, then the issue then is there's only a certain amount of treatment you can do before you run out of money. And that's sort of been the problem. And because there's been really meaningfully no real sort of additional money come in over the last many years now, we've been limited to how much we can provide. And I think this is the one of the challenges to the new government, that if they can, if they're going to change anything, then certainly changing the dental contract is going to be one of them. And yeah, it's a shame, because I think dentistry, because it's sort of, you know, we talk about primary care. Now, primary care has sort of, you know, four bits to it. We've got GP, eye health, pharmacy, and dentistry. But because we've been contracted, sort of paid in a slightly different way, because we're not salaried, essentially, we get treated slightly differently and commissioned right. slightly differently as well.
So is it fair to say that the way that dentistry has been paid for by the NHS is as a lump sum, irrespective of the number of people that you actually treat? Or is it per capita still?
Yeah, so that yes, up to a point, in that essentially the way we get paid is what we call units of dental activity. So we get a contract to say, in this particular year, this dentist will provide, say, 6,000 units of dental activity. And in those 12 months, you've got to fulfill that contract. You've got to do
right.
enough treatment. And it's not necessarily about the number of patients you see, it's the amounts of activity that you produce
right.
for those patients. And that's the issue. It's got to get away from the patients. It's more
right.
about activity. And I think that's where we need to go back to, is actually go back to, we've got this population and we're just missing out on so many people that need to come and see a dentist.
Yeah. And is there, so obviously through what we've been doing at POCDOC, we work extensively across what's referred to, like you said, as primary care, which I guess a lot of people listening would sort of associate with a GP surgery, but it's not exclusively a GP surgery. It sort of means the sort of your first port of call before you go to an A&E or hospital or anything like that, effectively anything outside a hospital. And they have a incentive structure called the QOF framework, which is around, it's very complicated, but and lots of different measures and things like that. Is there anything like that in dentistry or not at all?
No, and I think this is one of the things that perhaps, as part of the new dental contract, that some of these things may be brought in. That's something that came into GP practices, and I know a lot of doctors might be listening who know more about QOF than certainly I do anyway.
Yeah.
But this is not something that really came into dentistry. So if that is something they're looking for, absolutely. There are lots of other things that we can add onto what we provide as services, which would in the future be beneficial to the patient. So this is preventive measures. So where we sit and actually talk to patients, not just
yeah.
providing treatment, talking to patients about, you know, what is it that will benefit you in the long run? How do you help yourself to prevent
yeah.
yourself from getting disease in the future? It's always going to be better than you know, actually treating it. So as you say, absolutely, these are conversations at the moment that are being had with the Department of Health and with the Treasury.
Because I mean, because there's been such, I love these type of shows where we just bounce around. So I apologize to people listening if they seem somewhat chaotic, but I just find this area so interesting, because what primary care NHS have, they've identified it and they're working very hard on it, is around health inequalities. And I would take a guess, uneducated, that poor or sort of dental hygienic issues also trend along health inequality lines as well.
Very much so. Very much so. So, you know, we locally within our region, we do something called a dental health equity audit. So we look at areas of deprivation and we look at areas where there is a need for additional services. And then essentially one of the purposes of us as a local dental network, and don't forget, it's not just me, we've got a big team behind us here,
yeah.
and we're looking at targeting specific services to those particular areas, because we know the benefit there is going to be much greater than somewhere else.
Right. I think that's really interesting. And so, like, has that sort of equity concept been in the system for a while, or is it relatively new?
No, this is new. This is partly as a consequence of knowing that we have a capped financial system because there's
Right.
no extra money coming in. So we've got to use that money more efficiently. So there's no point putting money in areas where there's already provision of services. This is why it's important looking at the demographic data, looking at the information out there, looking at the deprivation data and saying, okay, these are areas we know there isn't enough services or there are areas of pockets of deprivation. We've got to target those services to those particular areas because again, the cost benefit is going to be much, much greater there.
And where does that and that's being done at a system level because the system bears the cost of those things ultimately.
Absolutely. So this is done at an ICB level. So certainly in the Midlands where I am, we've got the Office of the West Midlands where six ICBs have got together and said, right, dentistry, we're going to give you this to commission, look after it. And that's what we're doing. So we're looking at different parts. So obviously, there are only so many bodies in the system. That's why it's a team in that we're looking at one area at a time. So, okay, say, for example, Staffordshire. We look at Staffordshire, work out the pockets there and then target there. Then we go to Shropshire and then we target those areas there. And slowly, slowly, we're working around the system to try and use up the small amounts of unspent money every year into those areas.
I think this is absolutely fascinating. So we're going to jump after the, we're going to stop now for a quick 2 minute break. So we do two breaks a show. So this is our first commercial break. We'll be back in 2 minutes with Dr. Tony Ahmed, who is a dentist and chair of the local dentistry network in Shropshire and Staffordshire, and one of the most senior dentists in the UK. And when we come back, I want to dig into, really dig into, the reality or not of the sort of state, if you like, of dentistry in the UK versus what the media portray versus what the politicians say versus what's the reality for you and your team on the shop floor on the front line. So we'll be back in 2 minutes with the rest of today's show.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The station that makes you feel good.
Hello, and welcome back to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, and my fabulous guest, Dr. Tony Ahmed, who is the lead chair of the Staffordshire and Shropshire Local Dentistry Network and sits on the ICB, so the Integrated Care Board of Shropshire and Staffordshire as a 30-year veteran dentist and is taking us through the realities and the history and the evolution of the dentistry service in the UK. So before the break, we were starting to dig into the sort of the contractual elements and how the service provision has been put together under the NHS within the UK. I sort of want to take a quick step backwards and just try and set the scene a bit and get your take on it, which is the sort of the media, as it were, love the story. The Daily Mail and others, the other newspapers are available, love the story of like, it's impossible to get a dentist appointment. You know the stories I'm talking about. And Labour latched onto this as an attack ad angle, which I'm not sure if you saw that thing, or it was an Instagram type of ad video clip. Reel around. It looked like there was like 200 people outside a poor dentistry surgery trying to get in. So I don't quite know what actually the reality there was. But what's your view, just to try and bring it back around the concept of appointments and the NHS and I guess access? What's the spirit of NHS free at the point of care dentistry, and what's the reality of that? And what's causing that difference?
Right. So there's a number of bits to this. So we can talk about the sort of the dental profession wider, as in, don't forget, About 40 to 45% of dentistry is done privately in this country, and the
Okay.
rest of it is NHS. So, you know, we can either talk about dentistry as a global sort of profession or just specifically about NHS dentistry. So it depends which way you want to take
I
that.
don't know. I mean, I think that's really interesting. So almost half of all dentistry is delivered privately. And has that always been that way? Is that relatively static?
No, it's increasing, and I think this has been the consequence of the contract. So, since contract, because the money has been capped, we couldn't put any extra, you know, dental activity in for many years. So slowly, slowly, it sort of crept that way. But at the same time, because the government has made decisions, and it's not just dentistry, and I don't take, you know, dentistry on its own. The healthcare sector in general, I think, has suffered from underinvestment, and dentistry is just part of that sector as well. Slowly, slowly, you're finding that dentists and professionals within dentistry are moving slowly away from NHS and into private care as well. Now, me, I'll say straight away, I've been working as an NHS dentist, still am, as you can see. I've got my uniform on,
Yeah, you
still
got the uniform
working.
on. For everyone listening, Tony's in his scrubs.
Wet finger dentist, still seeing patients, and I've got patients after this as well. The point really is that until you're on the cold face, until you're actually seeing patients face to face, it's very hard to the realities of it, and it's getting harder. And as an NHS dentist, I'll say that it's getting tougher and tougher every year because of the squeeze in funds. And you talk about dental access, absolutely. So there are only so many of us to go around,
Right.
and this is an issue around workforce. There aren't enough dentists. And as a consequence of lots of decisions made in the last few years, so we talk about Brexit and some of the other decisions around not adding extra funds into some of the education and teaching. This has led to a reduction in the workforce, but also what it's done is allowed some of the dentists working within the NHS to go private. So consequently, because of that, you talk about access, the queues around there. Yeah, patients are definitely finding it harder and harder to find an NHS dentist. So that was my point really, that yes, there are dentists around, lots of dentists, but not as many working with the NHS. So if you want to find a dentist, that's not the issue. It's whether you can find an
Right.
NHS dentist.
So I think that's a really interesting take, and obviously that is a fine distinction that probably doesn't get made in the media. So actually, you know, you how if you were to go if you wanted to get like an annual dentistry checkup, let's just start there, and you wanted to go private, what do you think you're paying, like roughly cross country, give or take? I don't know.
Yeah, so genuinely, the most people what they will do is go on a plan. So it's like an insurance plan. So 20, £30 a month, something like that. It varies a little bit. So what happens is you go in for initial consultation first, which you may pay about 50, £60 for, something like that. And as part of that, you'll be onboarded onto a monthly payment plan. And essentially what that does, it provides you with a regular dentist and dental checkups to just for maintenance. This is it, isn't it? To keep on top of.
So dentists in the UK have effectively created or grown accelerated growth in a private dentistry insurance
Yeah, and there's a number
space.
of companies out there that do it. Bupa is one of them, but there's a number of different companies out there.
Denplan as well is a good
Dent
big one.
plan, absolutely. Practice plan. There's a few companies out there doing this now quite successfully. And some of the bigger corporates like My Dentist or IDH, these are some of the other bigger corporates that are doing this as well in-house. And that seems to be the direction of travel for some dentists. Now, me personally, as I say, I've been in an NHS dentist for a long, long time. I can't see myself changing anytime soon. But I
Right.
think this is the big decision. I think the new West Streeting and the Chancellor Rachel Reeves have got to make. Are they going to carry on pushing more dentists out of the NHS, or are they going to bring them back in? And
Right.
absolutely, there is a possibility. You could imagine. It's about making NHS dentistry attractive. It just isn't as attractive as it used to be.
Well, I think again, I don't know the unit economics, and I don't know how much rent costs and how much a dentist gets paid, and the assistance and the insurance and the liability, and I don't know any of that stuff. But it would seem to me to be fairly evident, which is that if what dentists get paid bears no relation to the increasing costs to of what they have to spend to employ people, because they have to employ people to, whether they do private work or NHS work, it's effectively the same person. There's not like a switch in workforce where suddenly you have NHS people shift it. Like, it's not shifts, you know what I mean? And the NHS workers are cheaper than the private workers. It's still the same people. So if all of the unit costs go up, but your revenue is capped, well, that isn't a great recipe for commercial success. And dentists, I suspect, like GP surgeries, are private entities, are they not?
Yes, absolutely. And you've sort of hit the nail on the head there, that slowly, slowly it sort of crept up on us. So we've been sort of absorbing the costs and the fact that there hasn't been an inflation increase over the last number of years, and we've just absorbed the cost. But there just comes a point where in a lot of people now they're making that decision. Now, as I said, this is what I'm hoping, that moving forward now, if the health secretary and the chancellor make the right decisions about the dental contract and actually make it more attractive again, there's no reason why. One, they'll stem the flow, but also it's actually attracting those dental professionals back into the NHS. Because genuinely, I think, when you've been, I mean, I was educated, everything in this country. I feel almost a duty to give back to my local community. And if I can stay within the NHS for all my life, I certainly will do. And there's no reason why people now qualifying, students qualifying now, coming out of university, when I talk to them, because I do a bit of teaching now as well, I lecture and I talk to the new graduates coming out. And when I talk to them, there just isn't that love for the NHS there used to be when I qualified. And that's what I
Do
want to
they
bring back here.
do people that are training to be dentists or sort of I'm not sure if they're called dental technicians or whatever the different sort of grades are do they work within the NHS as part of their practice, or can they just stay, can they do their experience privately and they can just stay private forever?
Yeah, so as you say, when a dental student comes out of university, 5 years at university, they come out, they qualify, they do 1 year what we call foundation training. So this is essentially like a pre-registration year, it's very similar to doctors. And then after that, once they've done that year, they are free pretty much to go wherever they want to. So our advice always is to stay within the NHS.
Right.
But a number of them will find it more attractive to work within the private sector. And I think this is where, you're a health tech radio. This is what we're talking about, is that there are lots of technologies out there to try and make our lives easier, certainly working with the NHS. There are ways we can try and make it easier, and that's the idea. Now, if the NHS can bring those into the mainstream, it'll just makes it less likely for those youngsters then to find, employment elsewhere.
What type of technologies do you mean?
So for example, I mean, certainly some of the new stuff that's coming out at the moment now, one of my big reasons, so as you mentioned, I'm a local dental network chair. One of the first work streams when I first came in, back nearly 8, 10 years ago now, was the referral system was so poor that everyone was still writing letters and everyone was sending things in paper and referrals were getting lost and things like
Right.
that. It just wasn't very suitable. So one of the things, and this is where we talk about my work with Rego and Vantage, and now NEC, as they've been taking over, is to actually streamline that process to make referrals, to make seeing patients and referring them on for treatment much, much simpler. And again, it's a team effort, isn't it? There's all sorts of things going on in the background to make this simpler and easier for people, but it makes our lives easier. See, we don't have to worry about things now. It's all done electronically. And that's just one of many other things.
Wow, I think it's so if you could wave a magic wand, what would this new contract sort of what would be the big ticket items from the new government that, if you could wave a magic wand, obviously no guarantees, clearly.
Sure. I mean, there's so many things I can think of now. Firstly, there's sort of three bits to it, isn't it? There's three bits. One is the actual contract itself. So this is the units of dental activity How much we get paid. Now, if they just increase that to a manageable level, and we can talk numbers here, but actually it's just increasing it. It's just unfeasible at the moment to be working under the current regime as an NHS dentist. Certainly as a new dentist coming in, it's just not attractive. But that's one thing. Second thing is it's the infrastructure funding. And this is something that a lot of dentists, sorry, working in private sector and actually in secondary care as well. That's funded through the trust, it's through other sort of means as well. Whereas if you're an independent provider like myself, working practice, I've got to fund it myself. So
Right.
for example, the big thing, there's two sort of main sort of big things coming into, from a tech perspective. One is digital dentistry. So this is scanning technology, digital
Yeah.
dentistry, where you're scanning and then actually manufacturing. So CAD/CAM, actually manufacturing crowns and veneers in-house. Fitting them in-house. And that's a big, big change to when I first started. Huge, the change across the workforce. But it's expensive, trying to get that into dentistry. Yeah, you're talking maybe 30, 40, 50,000 pounds, which as an NHS dentist is very hard to find.
So,
And the other
and you
thing.
right now, the way the contract works is that would fall on you. You're responsible for all CapEx investment.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. So
Wow.
again, if you're trying to innovate, if you're trying to better the service you provide
Yeah.
to your patients, you just can't do it because the money's
Well, no,
not.
that doesn't make any sense. Like, if that's a bit like saying that the hospital is responsible for all CapEx, like, it doesn't, I
Absolutely.
mean,
So, if a hospital wants to buy a new CT scanner, they're going to go to the trust. They're not going to take the money out of the consultant's wages. That's
No.
essentially the problem.
Yeah, or like, yeah, exactly. It's like, I mean, how many GP surgeries have their own MRI scanner? It's not
Right.
because they don't want to do MRIs, it's because the GPs would have to pay for it, which is ridiculous.
Absolutely. And this is one of the issues that, capital funding, infrastructure funding just disappeared when the new contract came out. And that would have been that, just putting some extra facilities in, some things like, as you mentioned, MRI, there's something called CBCT, which is what we use in dentistry, which is specific to dentistry. It just provides such a beautiful picture of people's mouths, and the images you can get is amazing. These
Right.
are sorts of things that we just don't have the additional funds for. And if the NHS were to put in, here's a pot of money for infrastructure funding, that'd be great.
Did it used to exist? Did it change?
Yeah, so again, before the contract, there used to be additional funds that used to come in, and they used to call it infrastructure funding, where every year there was an additional amount of money that that was essentially you bid for it. So, here's some money, but what you had to do was you put some money in yourself, and the NHS would put some money in for you as well. So,
Right, it's like match funding,
it
right?
was absolutely, and you know what? That makes sense because you're putting some money in yourself as well. You know that it's something you want to do. The NHS will then match it as well, and then
Yeah.
you buy whatever piece of equipment you want to. But ever since, obviously, that went and the new
I
contract, a
mean,
lot of
again,
that's
like,
disappeared.
I don't know about, I mean, you probably have, well, you definitely have a better idea than I am because you sit on the board of the ICB, but, I understand that there's sort of everyone needs more money than they have, effectively. But you can't expect, so you can't expect to create something out of nothing either. So you can't expect the quality and availability of dentistry to improve without making any changes, sort of
Absolutely.
evidently.
So you mentioned ICB. So yes, absolutely. I sit on my local ICB as a participatory member. We attend the meetings. It's great. And ICB has been set up, but now they've been set up, they're moving on to sort of operational phases. And there's new programs, new initiatives to address some of the local key challenges, certainly. And I think there does need to be this sort of slight sort of disconnect that you cannot address some of the issues around sort of integrated care if you're treating sort of primary care separate to secondary care. I think there has to be some integration between primary care, secondary care, and then social care afterwards as well. And
Well,
it has to be treated as a continuum.
and is dentist, where does, t where technically, where does dentistry sit right now?
That's primary care. So yeah, so it sits
Primary care, right.
outside. Yeah, it sits outside. And there has to be that sort of so conversation between primary care, secondary care, and social care to try and help a lot of these people. Because one of the other issues, and we haven't sort of talked about the elderly yet, but the population is getting older, and the elderly population in care homes, in domiciliary care, they're really struggling to find dentists, dental services, NHS dentistry. It's really hard actually, because again, the way it's commissioned, the way it's paid, it's just not there at the moment. And those additional services, again, things that locally we're doing, small little pilots to try and work out how to look after people in care homes. But there needs to be a national plan to try and, solve this problem.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming you feel the same way I do, which is like I'm all up for trying things. Look, let's have a crack at things. At some point, that needs to get evolved into a scalable, deployable model of care that can be taken and adopted across the entire system, not just a collection of random things that we did, that we wrote up, that we got a pat on the head for, and it has to be part of a recurrent funding stream, and so that it can be sort of scaled and committed to and stuff. It can't just be sort of like, well, we're going to do a 6 month, 12 month project, and I don't know. That's
And
what I
forgotten
think.
about. That's what happens. And you're absolutely right. There's loads of people with good ideas. And say, I can, speak for lots of other parts of the country, not just my area where we do our work here as well. But there are lots of these little pilots, and that's fine. Some of them work, some of them don't. But once they're evaluated and you can prove that there is definitely a benefit, and again, it's that return on investment. If you're preventing a lot of this disease, and in care homes, it's just oral hygiene, it's just cleaning, it's just simple stuff. Fluoride, toothpaste, just providing fluoride toothpaste to patients. Simple things like that, they can create the benefits to the patient. Things about nutrition. One of the big problems really is elderly patients with the dentures or missing teeth. If they can't eat properly, that effect will have the whole body. Again, it comes back to what you said right at the beginning, putting the mouth back
Well,
in the
and also
plastic.
like even stuff like, I mean, ongoing, even if it's low to mid-level pain affects mental health, right? We know that there's all kinds of issues associated with mental health. So there's it is about that holistic sort of view of things. And I know that's what integrated care boards and integrated care systems were sort of set up to do. So I guess there's an element of just sort of staying the course and hoping and believing that things will sort of improve because that's what we've sort of identified. I think the other thing that occurred to me, which you might tell me already exists, but I'm going to guess it doesn't, but there's the Department of Health and OHID, which is the Office for Health Inequalities and Disease
Disease,
Prevention, I
yep.
think, have an extremely well-funded, extremely well-adopted health check, the NHS health check, where effectively, GP practices or other entities can get paid anywhere between 25 to £40, depending upon the region, depending upon the individual, from 40 to 74-year-olds offering a health MOT, cardiovascular, diabetic prevention check, and you qualify for once every
I
4 years.
have one.
Right, great. And this is one of the things where POCDOC's being used as part of the technology to deliver that more effectively. As a separate aside, does anything like that exist in dentistry? And would Is that even a concept that you think would be valuable?
Wouldn't that be amazing? Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But you see, again, we look back at numbers. Only about 50% of the population actually sees a dentist regularly. So what's the other 50% doing? And these are people who are slipping through the cracks. These are people who are essentially just accessing emergency care when they have a problem, when they can't cope anymore. That's when they go. Whereas it's the regular checkup. These are the people that need the care. And actually, the people that are missing out are the ones we need to target. It's the ones that aren't coming regularly to us. And that's where I think something like an annual check, something like that, just a general check paid for outside of the dental contract would be amazing.
Yeah, I think that's something that we should that would make sense to me. We've got to go for our final commercial break, and I'm already 5 minutes over my allotted budget, so to speak. So we're gonna go to our last commercial break of this week's Health Tech Hour. Then we'll be back with Dr. Tony Ahmed for the last part of the show.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, and my guest today, Dr. Tony Ahmed, who is chair of the local dental network of Shropshire and Staffordshire and sits on the Shropshire and Staffordshire Integrated NHS Care Board. And it's been quite a ride through the history and the current situation of dentistry. I've really enjoyed the show so far. I want to go back a little bit to what we talked about at the beginning about the importance of, to quote you before we started the show, bringing the mouth back into the body. So it sounds to me like the sort of the implicit suggestion in that phrase is that for some time, people felt like people were dealing with those two things separately. There was the mouth and there was the body, and they were dealt with separately. And now that there's a movement to bring them back together, what's your view on that?
I mean, just the phrase putting the mouth back into the body sort of covers so many different things there. I mean, there are a number of aphorisms you can use to sort of describe that. You know, we talk about, you know, start with the patient and then sort of work backwards. That's another one. You know, patient-centered care, we talk about that quite a lot. Then it's always a, you know, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've got already. You're not going to improve anything. So you've got to change things. And I think one of the things that we've sort of worked out as well as dentists, you know, we're entrepreneurs, and you're an entrepreneur. And as dentists, we're running a small business. We're entrepreneurs, and we want to do the best we can for our patients. And we want to try and provide the best services for our patients. But we just need the means and the capabilities and the funding, of course, and lots of other things to be able to do it. But the benefits, as you said right at the beginning, the benefits, the cost benefits are huge for the NHS and for the wider public as well. The one of the big ones for me, and this is what I sort of champion locally with the ICB, I'm trying to really sort of push that forward, is fluoride in the water. Now, it gets controversial. We talk about mass medicine and all this sort of stuff, but as a healthcare professional, the conversation, the discussion is done, the research is there. There should be nothing to stop us doing it. It just requires legislation. It requires that little bit extra from the government. And this is where I'm hoping then moving forward to try and get that preventative measure in there. The other big one at the moment, and I know they've been talking about it, is supervised toothbrushing schemes. And again, targeted to that population, getting the youngsters in. So this is what we talked about just before the break, as in actually, yeah, targeting the youngsters, but actually talking to the elderly as well. If both ends to try and get them brushing, getting fluoride into their mouths.
What happens right now as far as schools is concerned? Is it completely sporadic and sometimes someone does something somewhere, but otherwise, like, maybe not?
Absolutely. It's very sporadic. So again, I can only champion what we do locally here in Shropshire and Staffordshire. So this is the Labour government will be talking about this, about supervised toothbrushing, but we've been doing this already, you know, locally here. So again, targeted. So it's not blanket. You target the areas of deprivation. So you look at the schools, look at those areas of deprivation where those schools are, and say, right, those are the schools we're going to target. So we have locally, we've got the Brilliant Brushes Scheme. Jill Olbert, who's our oral health improvement lead here locally in Shropshire and Staffordshire, does fantastic work with the help of our local dental health consultants, Kate Taylor-Wheatman, and all these people around. As a team, we go in, teach the teachers how to brush their kids' teeth, and then they go on and do it. And there's a whole framework. It's all been evidence-based. And it's actually, we've got evidence to say it really works as well. Simple measures, doesn't cost a lot. Again, this is not dentists. These are other people, dental care professionals going in. So the costs aren't huge, but the benefits are huge as well.
And I know from my own kids, when they've had individuals go into their schools, I've got the primary school, well, two primary school age kids and then one in nursery. And they're so excited when people show up with toothbrushes and, you know, they come home with a free toothbrush and stickers, and they're telling us all about how to brush their teeth. And we're not doing it properly. And don't you know, daddy, that's not the right way. And, you know, they really seem to get engaged by it.
Yeah, isn't it fantastic? And this is one of the learnings that we've found from going into schools as well, and nurseries, absolutely. We go into nurseries as well, is that actually that message then gets fed to the wider family, to the wider community, the importance of brushing, the importance of using fluoride, you know, twice a day, 2 minutes twice a day, spit don't rinse, all these little phrases that then sort of come out, and that makes such a difference to not just the kids, but actually to the wider community as well.
And how do you see the sort of future of dentistry in the UK evolving? Or maybe not just the UK, but we can start there.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many things. And I come back to Europe, sort of a tech entrepreneur. Using tech moving forward has got to be the way forward. And we talked about integrating referral management systems, but there's so much more we can still integrate. How, you know, last week or the week before, the huge outage that happened across the healthcare sector, but the wider sector as well. And a lot of it is down to the fact that the individual softwares don't talk to each other. And if they just had an integrated way of just talking to each other, that would make a huge difference. And I think this is where referral management systems sort of come in, because they're designed to sort of talk to lots of different bits of software and actually merge it all together. And I think this is where, you know, expanding some of the work that we've done, not just about referrals, but you can talk about prescriptions, you can talk about making appointments, choose and book, all these sorts of things. If they were just integrated into a wider network, makes the care of our patients just streamlined.
You know, when you go to the GP, like, is the GP able to refer people to dentists? Is that something that happens, or what? Is that not, that doesn't happen?
No, unfortunately. And again, this is one of the issues we have, that although it's primary care, you talk about GPs, dentistry, eye health, pharmacy, they don't really talk to each other very much. And that's one of the beauties, I think, of having an integrated care, a tech system, some sort of referral management system, but some sort of communication system between pharmacies. But I think pharmacies and GPs have had that for years, because they've obviously had, you know, prescriptions going backwards and forwards. That's fine. But eye health and dentistry have been left to the side a little bit. And then, you know, If I wanted to, you know, for example, if I saw a patient and I was particularly concerned about something, say, from a GP perspective, so for example, like a skin lesion,
right?
There's no way of me easily referring that to a GP. I would have to either pick up the phone or send a letter or an email.
That's bonkers.
Crazy, right?
There's this other drive to like make every contact count, right?
Yeah, very much. And I think this is where integration of these services is going to be a huge cost benefit to the population, to the health of the nation as well. And we talk about, you know, again, we'll come back to people in care homes. Well, how do they access care? Because they're closed in. They physically aren't able to.
No, and they're probably not picking up the phone trying to make a dentist appointment, I suspect. Yeah.
No, and they're relying on other people to do it for them. And these are some of the challenges. And moving forward into the future, I think integrating a lot of these technologies, a lot of these systems will certainly make a huge difference to our population. But things like water fluoridation, educating and developing the workforce, changing the dental contract, there are so many big ticket items that actually won't necessarily cost a lot of money.
No.
Will make a huge difference on return on investment on the population.
And what do you think? What, because all of that makes total sense, right? So what's not landed here at that sort of political governmental level? Well, like what's missing? Because the cost of sending individuals to schools to teach them about brushing and maybe giving away some free toothbrushes that cost pennies. The ROI, like you said, that has to be abundantly obvious. So what is the block here?
Honestly, it's just political will. That is the thing. There just needs to be that political drive, political will to say, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. And we're just going to do it. This is where I'm hoping now that Wes Streeting and with the Treasury as it is at the moment, as they're coming forward, if they can make these big decisions, again, won't cost a huge amount of money, a little bit of money, definitely, but not huge amounts of money in the grand scheme of things. The benefits in the future, and certainly for our oral health and our population, are going to be huge.
Brilliant. Tony, what a great spot to end on. Dr. Tony Ahmed, thank you so much for today's show. Like I said, I love doing shows like this where we just unearth so much about an area that people think that they know about, and I think that we've unearthed so much new things here that I wasn't aware of. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me. I've loved it.
Brilliant. And thank you to everyone for listening. We'll be back again next week.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.